When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Warning, the following podcast may contain the shocking history of the Boysenberry, a thrilling journey into a right-wing freedom center, and a rip-roaring discussion of Knott's Berry Farm with guest Ryan Perez. Strap in for Podcast The Ride.
Hello and welcome to Podcast The Ride, the podcast about theme parks hosted by three men who once counted audio animatronics as their only friends. Joining me today is Jason Sheridan.
Hi.
And the great Mike Carlson.
Oh, okay. Great.
He got a great.
Arbitrarily gave right. you a great and not
That's nice.
Jason.
I thought it did make me feel really good.
The greats. That was the Larry King movie on my part.
Anyone great, like the great Joey Buttafuoco. It would be anyone he was talking to.
The great Will I Am.
The one and only Pol Pot is here.
He was being nice.
We'll trade it out. I'll call you great next time, and I'll call Carlson Dirt. Hey, we're a part of Feral Audio, home to Doughboys, Beyond Yacht Rock, and many other great podcasts. Check out Feral Audio at feralaudio.com. How's everybody doing, guys? What's going on?
Good.
I don't know. Everything's fine.
No recent developments? Anybody's dying to get off their chests in the world of theme parks or otherwise?
No, I mean, I just ate a big tuna sandwich and it's sitting weird with me, but other than that, everything's fine.
So you've got a real roller coaster ride in your stomach.
Yeah, it was like a big bread bowl, basically, and then there was tuna in it, but it was called a sandwich, but it was weird, and I ate all of the bread. I ate every single piece of bread, and it's bad right now.
Was good bread. It was good Italian bread.
Oh, we all ate. I was pretending we didn't eat. I was keeping that secret. No, but we all just ate together, so.
That's true, and we don't want to sell out the restaurant, but start poking around the Burbank area. If you're in the Burbank area, see if you can guess what was the place.
I had a thing I wanted to address real quick, because I'm not 100% sure when this episode when you will be listening to this episode, listeners. As we recorded, it's early October. It's the start of the Halloween season. And I feel like we should mention a lot of theme parks go all out with the haunts, you know, Halloween Horror Nights at Universal, not Scary Farm. We are three men who do not like to be scared, right?
We don't do the haunts, do we?
We're not haunt people.
Yeah, the haunts.
I think this might be true of our guest as well, if I know him. Our guest
this
is
doesn't like a good spook.
Our guest is Ryan Perez. He's a great writer and actor.
Perez.
He's great. Let me ask, do you like to be spooked, Ryan?
This is a very odd way to...
Yeah, we didn't really build you up. We gave you no credits. Before Who is this even, guy?
Yes, immediately I'm a pussy before anything. First, you know him as a pussy.
No other achievements.
Do I like the spooks or not? I don't really love these, not Scary Farm, Halloween Horror Night kind of things.
Like teens jumping out at you to be, yeah.
No, I've only been to one, which was the Queen Mary. I think they still do it. They would retrofit their boat to be a haunted boat. And then on the grounds of the Queen Mary, they would have various horror mazes and things. And I found the whole thing very stressful. Mm-hmm. It's very cheap. It's a very cheap thrill. I don't care for it. Anybody can jump out from behind a thing and scare you. That's
It is pretty true. And hiring a teenager at minimum wage is probably literally cheaper than building an animatronic or some kind of machine to blast smoke or fog at you.
The thing that's weird to me is that people love it. It's beloved. Oh, yeah. This is the most popular time for all of these things. Is people go there just to get a teenager to jump at them. Mm-hmm.
But they also want to be part of the twisted mazes.
Sure.
Go into the world of Guillermo del Toro. Or whatever.
It does seem like those Universal Studios is. I don't go to them really, but they are supposedly good experiences for like. Horror film nerds. I don't think it's like they aren't like chintzy sellouty experiences.
They make a good set. They make the set look very authentic to whatever the IP is.
They have a Shining maze this year that looks.
Oh, well, that's an
great.
Interesting idea. Yeah. I think they should do a Darren Aronofsky's Mother horror house where the whole thing is a metaphor for the destruction of our planet.
Is that what it is?
Somebody and the patriarchies. Religious control.
Scarier than any character. We live in a constant horror maze.
We live in a horror maze. It's a horror maze about me and how I use my girlfriends and throw them away after they've become. They've given me all the artistic validation I need.
Is it a very personal statement on Mr. Aronofsky's part? It's the darkest part of his psyche, or
I mean, it's a very personal. I mean, this movie we could talk. If I should just have a podcast just talking about Mother, I think I could probably. I'll talk to these Feral Audio guys after that and see if after the show if I can have just one podcast.
It's called Exclaiming About Mother.
Yes, every week have a different person talking about Mother. Yeah, Mother has many different kinds of themes in it: an environmentalist theme, a sort of religious allegory, and a statement about. Artistic inspiration. They're all pretentious, all three of them.
One mild theme.
Universal this year also has one maze called The Horrors of Blumhouse, which is the production company that makes horror movies.
Oh,
so
it's got like
making
a
that move so to like their company is a codified like
it is
Pixar.
A thing, yeah.
Interesting.
So you get a little of The Purge, you get a little Sinister, and
a little bit
of Happy Death Day. The upcoming Happy
Death
Day.
So it's a tease for the movie Happy Death Day.
But no Get Out. That's their big hit.
I don't think they could do a Get Out.
Oh, I want a sunken place ride. That would be great.
Jordan Peele went in and pitched the ride, and then somebody clinked on a glass, and his ideas were not used.
I guess there'll be no ride now.
You joke.
Never mind, it was a dumb idea.
There is an actual discussion on the Horror Nights Twitter account of someone going, why didn't you make a Get Out house? And...
did they respond to that?
They did. That one of the Universal creative people were like, I need you... All right, I'm going to try to be very nice about this. I need you to think about what that movie was about and then think about why we didn't do that, that we couldn't do a house.
Who is the person responding? Doesn't sound like the official PR account of Universal Studios.
It was one of the creative people. Like, I don't know who exactly, but they were just like, we could not... The movie is a racial. We can't do that. We can't. We're glad you enjoyed the movie, but we could not make a haunted house. It would be very inappropriate.
Well, can we send the Get Out gang on a new adventure where they're running away from more conventional villains like skeletons and goblins?
Get Out meets Freddy.
This time, goblins were trying to sell me like as a modern slave.
Let me ask this. Are all the mazes in one Blum house? Is there a Blum house?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, probably not.
Yeah,
it's probably house. The Blum house is not a real house. Is what I'm asking.
I hope it's like because at the Disney Studios in Florida, you can go into a recreation of the Pixar campus. It looks like the Emeryville campus of Pixar. So if they made it look like whatever the production bungalow is of Blumhouse, honoring the famous Blumhouse headquarters,
just like a harried intern answering phones,
pallets of Diet Coke everywhere.
Are you here for the haunting? Okay, well, just have a seat.
you get to take a general at Blumhouse. The scary thing. And then they tell you they'll call you, and they don't.
The real world is full of horrors.
Blumhouse doesn't like your pitch.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. The on-tap cold brew machine is not working today. I'm sorry.
Well, Mike, you had some you had some business about the horrors of
that was a good Byron Allen transition.
Now you know,
so Mike, I understand you've got some complaints about what you've heard of lately.
So your father used to give you a whooping, right?
No, what was the one where he was like, "So, John, I understand you're getting older." He said that to like John Lovitz, I think.
I understand you have some observations about the difference between men and women.
For anyone who doesn't know, there's a show called Comics Unleashed. It's hosted by a man named Byron Allen, and it's just stand-ups doing their material, and he that's the way he transitions.
So if you like your comics leashed, do not tune in.
Comics Unleashed, also, like, you'll just be watching it, like I was watching it the other night, and like Robert Schimmel, like a dead comics will just show up on it.
There'll be four dead comedians.
Like, these guys have any Greg Giraldo.
Mitch Hedberg, you had a story about coupons. Is that correct?
Any Youngman. I guess he's alive. I thought he was dead.
You had a soft shoe to do, is that correct?
Hey, Lord Saul, what's in the newspaper today?
All right. Anyway, enough about Byron Allen. So my buddy and I were at California Venture, and we're at the line. So Cars Land is, a land dedicated to the successful franchise of Cars, where the cars talk. In case you have not seen these, it's Mater and Lightning McQueen, and kids like it. And we all probably agree we like Cars Land better than we like the movies. Cars Land is wonderful. The movies are fine. Mm-hmm. So in line for the big ride called Radiator Springs Racer, they play old-timey music, rock and roll, country stuff. And it's like real old. It's not like new old stuff. It's really old stuff. Yeah. It sounds like everyone's in like a little box. The recordings are all bad. And the one song, which I've heard before in pieces, we were sitting there and we heard it, and we were singing the chorus of it, and then we looked and we found the whole song, and it's a song by Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, and it's called Roly Poly, and I'll play here. You can hear it sounds old, and I can't believe this was. I think this was like a popular song.
I think it's a banger.
All right, so here. All right, we'll get after the piano comes up, they'll start singing. Oh wait, there's a whole intro.
Oh god! Well, now we're all up and dancing. We can't focus on some point you got.
Oh no, the fiddle's coming in. I really planned poorly for this. There's too much fiddle.
A trash can full of stones. They're gonna rotate.
All right, here we go.
Eating corn and taters, hungry every minute of the day. Roly-poly, gnawing on a biscuit. Long as he can chew it, it's okay. He can eat an apple pie and never even bat an eye. He likes everything from soup to hay. Roly-poly, daddy's little fatty. Betty's gonna be a man someday.
All right, so that should give you an idea of what the song, as best I can tell, is about a man admiring his son, his chubby son. And the chorus is, "Roly-poly, daddy's a little fatty, Betty's gonna be a man someday." And it's just like talking about how much his son is eating while he's doing chores on a farm.
Gnawing on a biscuit,
yeah. Hungry every minute. He can eat an apple pie and never bat an eye. And then the second verse is like, scrambled eggs for breakfast, bread and jelly 20 times a day. I mean, it's weird. I mean, it's a man who wrote like a pop song about his son overeating.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a fat shaming song.
No, he's admiring it. Him. Yeah, yeah.
I think without Mike Huckabee's father writing him this song, he wouldn't have achieved the success that he has in life.
That wouldn't be a shock if it was like, oh, did you know that it was written about Mike Huckabee? I'd be like, oh, yeah. Oh, of course. Okay.
Well, and then Huckabee got to sing it to his two large sons.
Yeah,
he got to sing it to his big boys.
He got to clang it on the bass.
Fox and Friends or whatever the hell show he plays bass on.
I learned to jam. I jammed.
Oh, he plays on a Huckabee.
Trick.
Oh, my text.
Oh, yeah. Don't yank that
cord out. I had it muted. I forgot.
Oh, it's the Bob Willis and the Playboys estate.
Over. They're shutting us down.
Yeah, when somebody plays one of my songs, a little fat angel gets his wings. Good luck carrying little fatty around. Those wings are going to work overtime.
I don't think I'd ever heard Daddy's Little Fatty in like a pop culture reference outside. There's like one Adventure Time or something. I think like Ice King calls one of the penguins Daddy's Little Fatty at one point.
I don't
so
know if,
so
that's
jarring
a, if that's a expression,
to
but
hear
we
that.
Were listening to, because most of the songs are just about, most of those songs in the line are just either about like rock and rolling or driving a car. And then there's this one we were like, what the hell is this?
Is it mostly country music in Cars Land or is it?
Well, it's outside in Cars Land, I think it's more rock and roll, 50s rock and roll. And then when you're in the line for Radiator Springs, it's more like country, old time country or like standard type music. Mm-hmm. I think it goes a little bit even, it's like older music in line for Radiator Springs, so.
But it's very specifically chosen, and they really went out
to. Yeah, so I guess really pay attention, because there might be some other weird songs, weird old-timey songs that are playing in that line.
Women should stay in their place.
They're like, all right, get on the car, get on the ride, and you're like, wait, what was that? No.
Don't worry about that.
You don't have not enough time to register.
Sending a subliminal message from the 40s to get me to re-adhere to traditional values. Hey, well, from one song, one cool jam to another, I'm going to transition us into today's topic with a spirited song, take you back to 1986, and here we go.
Can I stick around for the discussion?
The door is locked from the outside.
Oh, God.
And the man who's easily frightened, who wanted to talk about the place from which that song came, there's a YouTube channel you can find several employee morale building music videos, such as that one. That's my favorite. We Love the Farm. There's also a What I Like About Knots. So check those out. Anyway, hey, today we're loving the farm. Here with Ryan Perez, who you now you have some particular childhood affection. Right around that, you were probably going there.
It just
you
went away. It all went away.
You love it.
I take it back.
You might. A bit. You could be potentially in this video somewhere. You could have been at the park and unaware.
That's true.
1986. Yeah. You might be on the merry-go-round I'm looking at right now. You're on an ostrich going by. Yeah, so you grew up, because you grew up in Orange County and in Laguna Niguel or Laguna Niguel. So you're near Disneyland, but also very near to Knott's Berry Farm. What's your relationship with Knott's?
Well, Knott's I've always liked because it's kind of number two. Like in this, I guess it might be number three, actually. I think probably Universal in Southern California. Actually, because Magic Mountain, I think, is also more. So Knott's is coming in at four. Actually, Knott's might be the worst park in the country, with the exception of like Action Park or whatever in New Jersey.
When the tour people's kneecaps open.
Traction Park. Yeah.
But it has like such a huge, I'm just so, in my heart, it's number one. I really like Knott's more than any other. And growing up, so much of the of my memories of this of Knott's and really all these Southern California parks have to do with my parents and my mom, in particular. Lived out here. She's originally from South Carolina, but moved out here at 10 and lived in Anaheim. And so she has these memories of Disneyland as a young woman and going there when it was sort of a, when you didn't have to pay and you would buy tickets to individual rides and everything. So she has those memories. Her and my dad would go see bands at Disneyland. This is like in an era when jazz bands and big band Count Basie and Woody Herman and these kinds of Duke Ellington would play there.
Oh yeah, they got really legitimate groups. Yeah, and there was no admission. I didn't think about that. So they used it just as a bandstand.
Yeah, at the Carnation Plaza, and so much of growing up, these are the kind of stories that I would hear about. Like, yeah, Disneyland used to, you would just go there and dance. You know, it was not like a,
you can still actually. There's a place for it still. There's a tiny place where like old people go and some young people to swing dance at Disneyland at night.
Yeah. They tried to move it to Downtown Disney, and I think it happens there sometimes too, but then they eventually brought it back to the park.
Yeah, like there's a little area. There's a little area out of the way where they let you swing dance. Anyway, sorry.
And it's still sort of in the heritage of the park. And then my mom was also she was a hostess at a restaurant in called Shea Carey, which used to be in Orange or in Santa Ana. And it was sort of one of Orange County's like only 5-star restaurants, a very high quality restaurant, and there was a lot of celebrities that would come in, John Wayne and Lucille Ball, and Walter Knott would come in as well. And so she sort of had that, you know, time waiting on Walter Knott. And then of all places in the world, when my parents got married in 1970, they got married at the Church of Reflections. Knott's Berry Farm, which is a little chapel that sits inside of the park. And if you go there, it's still there. People still get married there to this day.
Wow.
But the park was very different back then. It was sort of like in the four wedding photos that my parents have. One of them is them in the Church of Reflections getting married, and then one of them is feeding chickens. It was like, oh, well, it's a fun place to get married. You go to the chapel, and then you feed the chickens, and then we'll go home. Like, it was that kind of situation. I don't even know if they had rides. I think they probably had a ride or two.
They were maybe starting to around then, but they also, they didn't have an admission for a very long time, and it sort of came out of this tradition of like, it was like a roadside stop. It really started as a farm, then they added this restaurant and started adding this like Old West calico ghost town kind of stuff just to like give people something to do while they waited for the endless line. Like, because this chicken dinner restaurant, the line would build up for 3-4 hours, and well, let's give people something to do. And it, so it really like very organically became a theme park and not really a premeditated
situation. Right, and it still shows to this day that it's sort of this weird mishmash of like, then this grew, and then we did this, and it's sort of all over the place, but it still has all this old stuff. So it's a very like interesting like time capsule.
Yeah, the Old West vibe is still very much there. And back when I was going to it, mostly in like the early 90s as a you know, whatever, middle school kid or whatever, we would take a middle school trip, and that would be the graduation trip. And also, Knott's had like a crazy deal in maybe 1994 or 95, where it was like $15 a person after 3 or 4 p.m. So like during the summer, we would go multiple times. My family would go multiple times. And so much more so than Disneyland, that was the place to go. And then also, it wasn't a particularly popular park, so you could just get on the log ride or whatever and ride it over and over and over again. And I mean, there were just no lines for anything. And so in a way, it felt like having your own little park or whatever at certain times of day. You would go there like on a late August day and have the park to yourself almost.
It's still pretty affordable compared to other parks. It is like, I think the tickets vary price-wise by season, but like if we went down tomorrow, I think it's like $45 to get it.
And it's one of those where like, you give us $80, you can come in whenever you want for a year.
Oh, yeah.
Like whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like, because they want people there.
Yeah.
Which I think is nice. It is an unfortunate thing about Disneyland that it's getting
more and more and more expensive, and now there's add-ons to get you like more better access to the rides. It really is becoming, you know, it's so insane for a giant family to go to Disneyland. So for there to be like a fun local place that is not bank-breaking, I think is cool.
And it's unique in the history of theme parks in that like both Disney and Universal were made by movie companies. You know, they were made by movie companies featuring their properties. And this, like you said, Scott, was a roadside attraction that just grew and grew and kind of evolved into a park.
Mm-hmm. And has never really retained any kind of property other than the Peanuts, which it has that association with. But
that, I think, is because of Cedar. It's owned by the Cedar Fair Company now, which runs Cedar Fair and in Pennsylvania, Dorney Park. And a bunch of other parks around the country. And I think a lot of those parks have the Peanuts characters.
But I think Peanuts was first. And I think they now have spread under that general license. The Peanuts also, it was Camp Snoopy is the Peanuts area, and it used to be Camp Snoopy in the middle of the Mall of America as well. I'm not sure how affiliated those things were, but two big, two Camp Snoopy locations in odd places.
We went, Scott, Ryan, and we were there once. And we saw.
Oh, this is the last time I was there. This is about 3 years ago.
Probably. Okay, because there was an ice show. It was a Peanuts ice show.
A Snoopy on ice.
Snoopy on ice. And one of my greatest memories is Snoopy at the very end dancing to Opa Gangnam Style.
Oh, my.
That's like my platonic ideal for entertainment.
Yeah.
This was very disappointing because I had never seen Snoopy on Ice, and I thought, it'll be a, you'll go see Snoopy on Ice, and it'll be Vince Guaraldi music, and it'll sort of have the, like, it'll be like an ice show that has the sweet feeling of a Peanuts Christmas special, and it was the most obnoxious thing I've ever seen.
There was, I believe, one of the routines was set to the Sugar Ray cover of Abracadabra. And then there was like maybe a Weird Al song, or like was Eat It in there or something, or there was food, there was a whole kitchen section, but it was just like humans. Snoopy was the only one who was a character. He was the only one on ice.
Just local talented ice dancers.
And like we were sitting in the front row and we were getting hit by like just the spray, the ice spray in the face.
Did you ever go to a park that had Star Trek on ice?
What?
That was in
what the hell?
King's Dominion, another Cedar Fair owned park now, was one of the Paramount branded parks in the 90s. And a lot of these regional parks, for whatever reason, they tend to have ice shows, I guess because they're cheaper than stunt shows to make. You just need some ice skaters.
What was the narrative of that?
I cannot remember. But there was definitely.
Well, they're on an ice planet.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm gonna guess.
They played this music. They played the Star Trek music, like you would think, like you thought with the Vince Guaraldi music would play with Snoopy. This was like the next generation was on at the time.
Oh, there's probably a video of this.
We got to do a whole thing on this. What were the characters?
were the
characters like Picard? Was Picard on ice?
I think it was like generic crew members, and then maybe some Klingons. I think there were two Klingons. Did like
Klingons
a mating,
ice skating?
We'll come back to this.
That's what like people outside the thing said when they looked at the marquee. Klingons ice skating. Now this I gotta see.
God, that does sound really awful and great.
Yeah.
The other thing that Knott's has right now that's like an IP is Elvira is doing a Halloween show.
She's been doing it
for many years.
Yes. Her last year, I believe.
Is this the
last year?
I think maybe.
We know you love Elvira. You're clamoring for more Elvira. My little niece, 10 years old, she says, I want Elvira. Where do we go to see Elvira? I go, there's a place. That's Berry Farm.
Where do we see her do what Elvira does? You know, Elvira's act.
Yes, it's like an old cabaret act, essentially. Or I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Is that what? I don't actually.
She tells jokes, I think.
Okay, sure.
I think it's like the Bill and Ted Halloween special, the thing they did at Universal. Are they still do it in Florida? Is that right?
The Bill and Ted show. This is the last year, the one in Florida.
All these
Halloween shows are ending.
Wait a minute. It's not. It can't be the real actress that plays Elvira.
It is.
It is.
Yes.
So she does shows.
Yes, she does like five shows in a week. She like lives in Buena Park for the Halloween season.
It's like a cabaret residency.
Just interesting at Halloween that there's an exclusive place you could see Elvira.
I mean,
and it's that. Yeah.
All kidding aside about Elvira, it's pretty cool that Elvira's down in Buena Park for a month.
That's great that she just has a residency for the month. That's terrific.
Now that you know it's not a regional Elvira.
So weird knockoff Elvira.
On all the cedar points, there's a different young girl playing Elvira. No, that wouldn't be fun.
Yeah. Real deal.
You would see right through that.
The real cleavage. Isn't that the thing? I don't know anything about Elvira. That seems to be a big...
Elvira was... That was her thing. She was sexy. She was sort of a sexy vampire. I think Vampira sued her.
Yeah. She stole Vampira's gimmick, supposedly.
But she's a Groundlings character.
Yeah, she is, because she's in... The actress is in... what's her name?
Cassandra Peterson, I believe.
She's in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
That's right.
Yeah. And there's a moment... my memory of Elvira, I might be wrong about this, but it was like as a little kid staying up to watch Saturday Night Live. Sometimes it would be my two memories was it would be like preempted because of wrestling, which was a bummer, because I was not a wrestling watcher, and it also preempted because Elvira would sometimes come on. Uh-huh. I feel like you'd be like, "What's Elvira doing?"
I think up until a couple of years ago, she had a show still at like midnight on NBC or whatever channel, and it would just be like Mystery Science Theater, but maybe a tenth of the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally mean to say it would be like play a minute of the movie and it would be like a wolfman and like a little circle would appear in Elvira and she'd be like, "This looks like my last ex-boyfriend." And then like the circle would close and then it would be a minute and then another minute and then she would come back in with another joke.
Oh, she would host a movie.
She would host basically like a bad movie.
Like a Goulardi or a Joe Bob Briggs.
So it was the same kind of horror movie host gimmick, but it seemed like they just probably had like 30 of them and they would just put these in different movies and they were the most generic because she was literally like my ex-boyfriend and like rolled her eyes
for any
and it could be any weird looking thing or guy.
Wow,
I don't know that that's true, but it felt like they were so not specific to whatever I was watching.
The production value sure is hokey of what's going on behind me.
Yeah, whoa.
Generic comments to comment on an old movie, that's like a reverse Dream On. That's like if you put Dream On in a thing that made it go backward, it would be watching an old movie with contemporary comments that don't apply to it necessarily. I figured it out.
Wait, what channel was this?
Yeah,
Dream
was HBO
on?
Dream On?
Dream, yeah, that
so,
was
but,
HBO.
So this would be
I don't
on
think I ever saw
OBH.
Any.
Oh, you got to watch a Dream On. That's when Dream On is one of those HBO shows that like HBO Go or Now has disavowed. Like I don't think
what
was
it?
I don't think it's in the collection of
really
old shows that you can pull up on HBO.
But I mean, what happened on? Like I thought I knew what it was, but I can't
Dream
picture
On.
It now.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, Dream On was it was about a guy. Who, hell, it was Brian Benben was the guy, and the idea was that as a kid he'd watched all this old television, and so as he's going through his daily life, dating and troubles at work or whatever, it would cut to clips from old TV shows to punctuate what was going on. So he's in bed with a woman and he's having a hard time getting the bra off or whatever, and then it would cut to an old movie where a guy's trying to defuse a bomb or something, and that was how the show worked.
Wow.
Would it be a rights issue?
Oh, probably. That's
on,
true. Yeah. Actually. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they have like their old horny shows and stuff? Like the Real Sex? Do they have all those or whatever? Like the...
I think they have like one or two Real Sexes, but not the entire collection of Real Sex.
Also maybe a rights issue.
That's true. Real Sex is so funny because it was like Real Sex 57. Let's just make it a series. Why are we doing Real
one
Sex
off.
1 million bajillion gajillion?
Yeah, they like, have to keep renumbering.
Yeah.
Like Chicago albums.
Yeah.
Roman numerals. I'm jumping around in order of things a little bit here, but this kind of dovetails into. I found a YouTube oddity of a weird cable show that seemed to be a cable show that was on, but it could have been like a presentation, and there were just clips from it. It was just cut up into parts, but there was a show called Dinosaurs
that was hosted by Gary Owen from Laugh-In. Is that right? That's who Gary Owen is? But it got the announcer.
He was the announcer.
But there was a show about dinosaurs where they like explored the modern fascination with dinosaurs and went to like weird road stop places that have dinosaurs, like the place on the way to Palm Springs. And there was so I found a clip of Gary Owen and the other host going on this ride, Kingdom of the Dinosaurs, which is a dark ride, a sadly departed a dark ride that Knott's Berry Farm used to have. And you can watch it. It's not an edited segment of him on the ride. It is just raw footage pointed at the host, and you don't really see what's around him too much. And you can hear the director in the other car giving ideas of lines and things for him to say. So you'll hear some mumbled thing, and then Gary Owen will repeat it back, such as they pass by like a big, you know, like lava flow, something that looks real hot, and Gary Owen says, "I'll have my filet medium rare, please."
Oh, that's
riffs on.
That's good.
And then later they pass by a particular animal, and Gary Owen says, "Ah, look at a saber-toothed executive."
Oh, this sounds like this. Whatever director was feeding him lines, this sounds like Scott Gardner's dream job. Sounds like everything you're mentioning this because you want to see if there's a contemporary example of this.
Right? If any aspiring sizzle reel creators out there are.
There's an 80-year-old announcer that you can feed lines to. Like, oh, looks like my mother-in-law.
Wait, right, like, yeah, lines about theme parks through a voice that I can do very readily.
I rode Kingdom of the Dinosaurs a bunch because it was one of those rides with no line. If you went to the park in like 1994, no line.
Yeah.
And I had my little sister Carly at the time, she was 4 or 5 years old, loved dinosaurs, and so we would jump on that ride, and it was a good ride.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask, was it a slow moving ride?
Yes.
Someone who grew up in Orange County and used to go to Knott's a lot told me once that there is a ride at Knott's that teenagers would go on to make out, like a Tunnel of Love kind of ride. And I think it might be the dinosaurs ride because it was dark and slow.
I've heard about teenagers making out before. Sounds interesting. I don't know about this. I don't know about teenagers making out. But it was definitely slow enough.
Okay.
Every ride at Knott's Berry Farm is slow. The Calico Mountain thing is slow. The log ride is slow. I can't think of one.
Train,
not
the
slow.
Wagon.
The train, which by the way gets robbed.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been on the train during a robbery?
You know, I haven't actually. I forgot that they did that.
Oh, it's great. It's one of the great. I think this is in many ways. I think the train at Knott's is better than the train at Disneyland.
There's a robbery.
They should brand it to be like a assassination of Jesse James by the Calico Ford ride.
I saw a video of that too that had a great theme park joke where one of the guy, like one of the the cowboys, is like pointing out people on the ride, like yeah, I know all these people. There's Billy Sue, there's Billy Joe, and there's Billy Goat. sorry, sir. I didn't mean to.
Good, clean fun.
I like jokes like this. I feel like everyone laughed a little earnestly at that, right?
Yeah.
Good for that cowboy.
There's a lot like with Knott's. It does feel like because they do like a whole old West town, and there's a lot even more like characters, people in character, people that'll talk to the sheriff in front of the jail, or you'll talk. There'll be a guy in a rocking chair that'll razz you as you walk by. Like there's a little. More interactivity than there is at Disney, I feel like.
One of the great Knott's attractions is, and I believe it's still there, but this was a family tradition growing up, is there is a jail cell with a wooden carved character in it who's called Sad-Eyed Joe. And you can go up to my parents knew the trick where you can go up and talk to the guy that does the voice beforehand and give him information. Mm-hmm. And so we went, I remember one time going with my little sister and my mom goes back there and gives him information. And then through the little thing, he says, "Hey, how you doing, Carly? How's your brother, Ryan? And how's first grade? And I heard that you're here for da-da-da-da." And it blows the kid's mind because Sad-Eyed Joe knows everything about the kid. It's a...
Folks, Michael here. Eating well is hard sometimes, but that's where Factor Meals comes in. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. They've got 35 different options to choose from each week. So what are you waiting for? Get started today. Get after your goals. I've been getting after my goals. I had some creamy Parmesan chicken. It was delicious. I made it and I felt smart for doing it. A great thing about Factor is that it's flexible for your schedule. You get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Head to factormeals.com/podcastride50 and use code podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code podcastride50 at factormeals.com/podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do it.
That's like one of the great. I mean, imagine being a little kid and that happens. It's terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to put it together.
That's really
like
magical.
A Santa Claus type experience. How did they know?
Yeah,
that's pretty neat. There's a wooden character who is no longer at Knott's that I found in one of those. If you go to Barnes & Noble, there's like a sepia-tinted book that tells you about the history of a local
the
area.
Historic images of the world America.
And
yeah.
I found one for Knott's Berry Farm, and they had a local character who I can only assume they have retired, who is Wing Lee, the Chinese laundry
man. Oh, no.
He had a sign on his laundry display that says, No ticky, no shirty.
Stings
the ears.
I thought the phrase was no ticky, no laundry.
That's the phrase I've heard.
Ticky and shirty with double E's. So bad on you for that one, Knott's. Although I have also seen some touting of the fact that they do acknowledge the role of Chinese Americans in building the railroad. Like there are Chinese robots on those rides on the mine train.
I guess that's good.
I saw a site that claimed that was good.
I will go along
with that and say that it's good.
Yeah.
Knott's is also home to dioramas, right? Of all the missions in California.
Is that still there? I kind of remember that.
I feel like I heard they started putting those back in. Full disclosure, I have never been to Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh my God.
I want to go down there, and this is all just making me even more excited to see all this.
You would really love it, and
you'll never come back.
I love chicken dinners. Knott's also where they originally grew boysenberries. They're famous for that.
We should talk about the man who started it all.
Yeah. The man, the myth, the legend.
Knott, your mom's friend. Did you get anything out of her? Like, do we know about the guy?
Then they came into the restaurant with his wife, and they were all very
Cordelia,
courteous.
Cordelia.
Mm-hmm. Cordelia. The lovely Knott. Cordelia.
Who cooked all the chicken dinners herself. Mm-hmm. She really is to blame. She's really, that's not the right word. She should get the credit the positive word for kicking off the whole thing, because though they had a successful farm, it was the chicken dinners that caused this influx of people to come in and ultimately grew the place into a theme park. And she still, like, through the 70s, if you went and got a boysenberry pie there, it was very possible that Mrs. Knott made it herself.
Wow.
That would be amazing to get one that she touched with her hands.
She says, "Not touch this pie." Doubtfully she signed it in some way. If she could, like, kind of autograph the
she crust. Had a signature way that she would decorate the crust,
Mrs.
perhaps.
K.
So I didn't know this, but Walter Knott teamed up early on in his farming career with Rudolph Boysen, and they created the boysenberry.
Oh boy,
that wasn't a thing that existed.
I heard this other version of it where that's kind of clunkier and more confusing. Where a guy he knew of this guy Rudolph Boysen, who was the head of parks in Anaheim, and said, "I heard you tried to make a berry and it didn't really work out for you." And he said, "Oh, I just got a couple of vines of it left. Here, you take them. See if you have any luck." And then it flourished for some reason at Knott's, which that seems like I'm worried that that's a cover for, like, he stole the berry.
Yeah, that seems like he stole the berry. Mine is just some Wikipedia.
Mine is probably a website that got it from Wikipedia.
Sure. We're all just using the same barely sourced material.
Yeah. You guys need to go like talk to the farmers. You need to get out there in the field and get actual write the definitive berry theft.
Who made the
expose?
Let me throw another one in too, which is that it's possible that Boysen originally got it from a guy named John Lubin, and that he called them Lubin berries, maybe this was just a chain of lies on Wikipedia or wherever I saw it, but that Lubin might have taken it from Luther Burbank, who is the person
who founded
the very city we're in right now. So there's a lot of weird stuff going on with the history of the boysenberry.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Not clear. I like this kind of old-timey fight, though. Like, if we were all fighting one day about, like, no, it's the Carlson berry.
No, Jason stole the Carlson berry from him. And
you'll never prove that, old boy.
The Sheridan berry.
It just sounds better to the ear.
We've given the public what they want. Nobody would buy a Carlson berry. Barf.
Sheridan. We should all wish that we could be so successful to have a berry.
And to have a tangible skill such as crossbreeding berries to get. What is that? How do you do that to begin with?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like when you go to wineries and they start explaining how they make the wine and you get bored immediately and just want wine samples. Yeah.
Yeah. Coppola does it. He's out there.
Does he explain it to you?
I'm making grapes. I got the best grapes, Sophia. Come try these grapes. I don't want to direct movies anymore. No, I just want to play with grapes.
I was thinking about putting a red grape and a white grape together. It came out gray. Who'd have thunk? Anyway,
Walter Knott, famously friends with Walt Disney. Like, yeah, visit each other's parks steal each other's ideas, I guess,
unclear if they were, like, because some people say they're friends. There's a lot of misinformation, I feel like. Some people are like, we don't know if they were, like, really friends. They were, like, competitors, but I don't know if they were truly, like, friends. But the one thing is clear, they certainly stole ideas from each other.
Yeah.
And, like the log flume ride at Knott's clearly influenced then Splash Mountain later, which isn't Walt's creation, but
the mine train through Nature's Wonderland at Disneyland.
Yeah, like, Walt stole that right away from
the Calico.
Wait, no, didn't that predated? I think I'd have to.
Did
be
it?
I think Calico mine ride does not happen until the '60s. But what the big thing? I could be wrong about this, but I think the big thing that influenced Walt Disney was the, like, hidden lines. That there's the story where that ride, the Calico Mine ride, that Walt Disney got on it because he thought there was no line, and then he got it in, and the line was hidden in the rock work instead of just sitting out in, like, a boring kind of back and forth queue, like, which is all Disneyland had up to that point.
Sure, yeah.
So the idea of, like, the line is also part of the theming. Waltz definitely was influenced by all these the nicer word by Knott's Berry.
Yeah, and you're getting like you're looking at some cool stuff and it's air conditioned and the idea of a lot of the line is indoors as opposed to all.
Yeah. And then you're not sitting out in the sun and it's more inviting if you see a ride with a 3-hour line outside, you know, you might skip it. But if you don't know how long it is and it's all hidden, then
sure.
Scott is indeed correct.
Hey,
about the lines.
Okay. All right, let's not credit it. Well, yeah, what else though in this back and forth? Oh, I think one thing I discovered in the history of it that it was just an open gate park until 1968 when there was a bunch of vandalism, so they had to build a wall to keep people out of the park, and only then did they charge admission.
Wow.
Which actually I'm not sure when Disneyland became an admission park.
They held on to the ticket booklets for a while, and used them
maybe?
In Florida too, because I remember my dad talking about having, when they went down to Orlando in the '70s, they were still using the ticket booklets.
Okay, but anyway, it does seem like they bounced back and forth in terms of like figuring out how the modern theme park works.
One thing on those ticket booklets, are you talking about the in Orlando or?
Disneyland and Disney World, they used to, you would
the
pay.
The e-ticket book and D-tickets.
E-ticket book,
e-ticket.
Yeah. My parents would use that phrase, e-ticket ride. One time years ago when the movie Waterworld came out, I saw At the premiere, they interviewed James Caan, and he walked out and said, they said, "What did you think of Waterworld, James Caan?" And he says, "Oh, it's great. It's an e-ticket ride."
Oh.
Said that phrase up. Did he think of that before? Did someone ask him to say it that
way? I think that was how he described a really fun ride, was that's how you would describe a thrilling experience.
That was the vernacular at the time, I guess.
Yes. So people this is 1995.
Yeah, so this is 1995, the vernacular.
Yes, but as an old man who had gone to Disney World, I'm sure.
And theme park enthusiasts still refer to, like, you know, the big marquee, your Space Mountain's Haunted Mansion.
Oh, so that's still e-ticket. Oh, so that's still in the, okay.
I mean, like, kids don't maybe know kids that, don't. But like, no. Yeah, the inside the Imagineering, like, and then weirdos that do podcasts certainly know, well, this is more of a D ticket than an E, you know. Yeah. The thrill, the robots aren't quite as good on this ride as they would be on an E ticket.
Or to know what they would have charged.
Only the head moves on this, not the arms. The
those
arms
new Star Wars rides could be F tickets. It could go bigger than anything talking we've about seen F, before. Yes.
They are saying they want these to be F tickets, these Star Wars.
They've used that phrase. They want to go beyond E.
With the big ride-through one. This,
probably not the best thing that the letter after E is a big old F, though.
You mean because F is failing? Or
grade is good.
It's like bad.
Taking
it's
back
like, they say bad and they mean good now?
More on Walter Knott from his obituary in the New York Times from 1981, which the headline is very funny. It's Walter Knott of Knott's Berry Farm is dead. Like, that's what they wrote.
Blunter time.
Like, okay. Like, not like kindly old man passes away. It's like, no, he's dead.
Jam jars across America emptied to half full in respect.
Was he preserved in any form?
Save it for Mr. Owens' special.
Was he preserved?
He was described as a trim and spunky man. And personified, this is weird, the personified the...
Hey!
O'Wiley.
I got a new ride out of you. I got a new jam out of you, too.
Can spunky. I write obituaries?
This spunky man deceased.
I don't know what this... Maybe somebody knows where this comes from. Personified the rags-to-riches, which obviously is rags to riches, but I don't know the spelling. RAGS-TORICHES. Like, what is that for? Does anybody know what that's from? Spelling rags to riches like this?
As one word?
Rags to riches?
Rags to riches. Is that from something?
This is just a poorly written piece of shit you're reading, and I don't know what any of it means.
I think James Caan coined that term.
He was a very conservative man, which
we found out. He was more politically active than Disney, right?
Yes.
That's what we're saying.
So he has the full Independence Hall also, which is in Knott's Berry Farm, which is still there. But also he financed a lot of conservative endeavors, which, you know, is probably very bad.
He like gave out pamphlets in Knott's Berry Farm potentially about conservative ideals.
Jason?
And the can-can dancers of the Calico Saloon would often spout anti-communist propaganda.
He had a freedom center in the park, he called it, and it produced pamphlets and film strips extolling free enterprise and self-sufficiency and deploring big government and taxes. So do you have any recollection? As a child, do you remember going to the Freedom Center?
Now that's an e-ticket, baby. Oh, Freedom Center.
I don't know.
That's an e-ticket for enterprise. I don't remember this at all.
The Freedom, I mean, he died in 81, so maybe as soon as he was dead, they're like, shut the Freedom Center down.
Get the Freedom Center out of here. No, I don't remember
any
political.
Mr. Knott, we will keep the Freedom Center alive and burning bright.
It's funny to think about now, because I feel like people who don't live in California, when you talk about California in terms of national politics, it's always like, oh, it's a blue state.
Yeah.
But there's a huge conservative streak in California. I mean, Orange County gave us Richard Nixon and Ronald. Mm-hmm. Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan were both California politicians before becoming president. And Orange County sells a lot of very conservative pockets.
Yeah, when I was a kid growing up, I lived in the most conservative congressional district in the entire country.
Wow.
It was the most conservative?
I believe so. In the mid-90s, it was. Oh, yeah. And I remember hearing that in school and thinking, like, oh, shit.
Now it's, just, now it's the chillest conservative county. It's the most relaxed. They say that Walter Knott and Carl Karcher.
Carl Karcher also came into my mom's restaurant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
A different, not his own.
And Walt Disney. These guys all came into Shea Carey. Yeah.
That's wild. We haven't previewed this, and it's only 49 seconds. I found a clip from the Freedom Center.
Whoa.
It's clip courtesy of Orange County Archives. It's from 1964.
Okay.
So who knows? We'll see what this is.
I think that if we are ever going to eliminate poverty in America, it will have to be done through the free enterprise system and certainly not by government.
That was Walter Knott, owner of Knott's Berry Farm, a family entertainment center near Los Angeles. Last year, nearly 2 million dinners were served here, with Walter's wife Cordelia in charge of the kitchen. The farm is a huge playland, and Walter Knott makes sure that his employees share in the profit. He also puts his ideas into action in other ways. For instance, he has established in a rehabilitated farmhouse the Freedom Center, a bastion in a one-man program to bulwark certain of our liberties, which he believes are being eroded by authoritarian ideologies of the right and left.
Wow. That does not beat around the bush either.
Authoritarian ideology.
You would be a kid sitting there listening to that in the Freedom Center.
It is funny how like nowadays people talk about like, oh, the Trump administration has destroyed decorum and that sort of thing. But like back then, you would be hearing that about like our boys shipping off to Vietnam, like, and it's just like these insidious things would be presented with like wholesome Leave It to Beaver background music. I mean, even the Iraq War. Like, that was a thing where it was like, well, everyone is very composed. All the politicians are very composed and professional, but they still sold, like, this crazy, like, war.
Well, look, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Yeah, Jason, that's
come
true.
On,
let's I mean, you get that so Freedom
you like
Center.
Now. You, what you're saying is you like it now, Jason.
I mean, I'm a
Jason
crass,
Sheridan
I'm
is on the
man.
Record for saying he likes it now. He likes
this
Trump
is now
better.
The second episode in a row where yes. this bit is going on.
Trump tells it like it is. He doesn't underscore things
no.
with some old film strip
he doesn't
soundtrack.
Need, yeah, some old, yeah. like, Land of Chocolate. Homer Simpson music to play while he's
Donald
saying
Trump
something horrible.
Need full sentences to get his idea across.
Every day he becomes more presidential. In fact, I think we should bring back that Freedom Center. Bulldoze that restored Calico Mine Train.
I think Trump would have gotten bored midway through the clip you just played. He would have drifted off and started tweeting.
Or just pulled out his emergency McDonald's bag.
Oh, sorry, I couldn't hear it.
Man, so there you go. That's
the history.
The history of Knott's.
But you know what? They got less conservative as time went on because in the 80s, they opened two hot dance clubs for teenagers.
God.
One called Studio K and the other one called Cloud Nine. You could go see all the hottest DJs from K-Rock. Richard Blade would be there.
This is on the premises
Richard
of...
Richard Blade?
Yeah. I forget who that was.
I don't
exactly,
know
but,
who that is.
I saw him in a little pamphlet about Studio K. That's another little back and forth Disneyland arms war, which I'm sure I hope to God we talk about in a later episode, because Disneyland opened the teen nightclub Videopolis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they both had competing teen
Now, what
dance
happened
clubs?
To these clubs? How come they don't... They,
well, I believe
not
there
still
was
around?
Stabbing at one, or what, like
oh,
one.
Was there an incident in one of them?
Or maybe in the parking lot.
I think it was
lot,
in the
like
parking lot during Videopolis.
Or
yeah,
something. Yeah.
Mm. When teens dance, they start getting rowdy and they get violent and horny, I guess. And that's a bad
probably
mix.
Why they had to close down Kingdom of the Dinosaurs. Pregnant on the ride, and people were just getting too horny on the damn ride.
There was a custody battle between the mother, the father, and the dinosaurs.
Technically, I caused this. That was a T-Rex.
That baby
target.
Is property of the Knott family.
So when you, Ryan, when you were a kid, though, you never like saw the dance club and were like, let me in.
Never saw the dance club, but an average Knott's thing would be we would, it was an easy, relatively easy park to sneak food into. Mm-hmm. And so that was another, you'd either eat at the chicken restaurant or if it was on a sort of a more money saving day, you could sneak like a bunch of sandwiches into the park and ride on, there was a parachute ride or a sky drop ride that was very scary.
Yeah, no longer there, I don't think.
Yeah, no longer. So many of these things are now gone.
Yeah.
There was the mine ride, of course. There was the Bigfoot Rapids ride where you would get soaked and then go into the... where is it that we went?
Oh, the Mystery Lodge.
The Mystery Lodge.
Yeah, that's what I was going to...
That's
the first... That was the thing you were...
Do you know about this, Jason?
Scott was most excited, I think, to show me the Mystery Lodge. Well, I did not know what it was.
My wife could not have been less excited. Like, again, we're doing the... She might have just not done it. No patience for dull shows.
She's like, I would rather look at this grass than go into the Mystery Lodge.
She can sit quietly, and I think she did.
Is it like Twin Peaks? Is Black Lodge? Is it like a place where everything is weird?
No.
Don't maybe it is, though.
Am I prepared to explain Mystery Lodge?
I think you have to give a brief explanation.
It's a thing that was at like a Vancouver World's Fair Expo kind of thing, and they just moved it lock, stock, and barrel. lock and stock. I'm not sure there's a barrel in this ride. Yeah. That'd be too exciting. But it was like, it's a slightly multimedia show where a wise old Indian tells tales of...
he tells a tale about a raven pretends to be an owl.
Oh, the raven. What a trickster.
And also, before you go in, they admonish you very heavily, like, show respect to this... thing. This is like Native American history and show, like, don't make, they would be mad at me if I did the voice. Well, actually, a lot of people would probably be mad.
Yeah. We're going to get a problem online.
But yes, it's like, this is very serious history, and then you walk in and it's an animatronic
Native American.
Well, no, you know what it is? It's like a performer who he performs to a lip-synced track, and he wears an old Indian mask over his face to make him look like an old man, and he's like hunched over. It's a kind of a magic show that he's interacting with a projected bird, like the Haunted Mansion Ghost.
Screen. There's a screen in between that looks like it's just a mirror, but the mirror is actually...
So that
like
is a real
a projection.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh my
yeah.
God! I thought it was a robot. I thought it was a very sophisticated robot.
Shouldn't be underselling the show.
That would be one of the greatest robots of all time.
I don't think so.
Knott's has restored a lot of their classic rides in recent years and uses Garner Holt, the same animatronic manufacturer that Disney uses to repair and
The mine ride has better animatronics.
I was told, because I didn't go like eight years ago, the mine ride, which is you go through this mine and you see a bunch of robots like working in horrible conditions in a mine, breathing in, you know, getting black lung.
Conservative values.
Yeah, conservative values.
But they got that Asian one.
So everything's all right.
Everything's fine.
But I didn't see this, that like if you went on that ride 8 or 9 years ago, all of the characters were melting. All the skin was like melting off of them. And before the restoration happened, it was a nightmare ride of like all these men's faces were falling off. And then they went in and did a full scale, like, cleaning up the whole thing.
Which they did a great job. And here's a thing to congratulate Knott's on in the recent past. Really great job restoring that ride. Did they restore also the Calico mine ride, or was that just
the mine ride and the log?
Yeah,
both of them have gotten recent overall.
Yeah,
they're both great and really fun, unique experiences and good reasons to go there. I also just went to I just checked out the chicken dinner restaurant, which they have recently remodeled, and now it's like a cool gastropub kind of place.
Wait, Cordelia's restaurant.
No, they didn't. It's like still homey. I mean, it's like as cool.
That sounds like a bummer.
It's as cool as like an Applebee's would be.
Oh, I think, sucks.
You dig it though, I think.
Really?
It doesn't feel like.
Is
just
it the
like
same week as we went?
Weren't you telling me there was a TGI Fridays in the park?
It's across the street. There's a TGI Fridays, but it's on site.
Mm-hmm.
That's another great thing about Knott's. There's an on site TGI Fridays that you don't have to pay admission to get to.
Mm-hmm. Please show respect to the Mystery Lodge, and if y'all are hungry, there's a TGI Fridays.
Yes.
Jack Daniel's chicken strips, always in fashion.
Well, Was Mrs. Knott's, was the, we went to a breakfast buffet there like a couple years ago. Was that the same room or is that a different?
We had mimosas and the breakfast and buffet at Mrs. Knott's. No, they've redone it since then, but it's nice. It looks like a new, it looks like a Frontierland type.
That's kind of a bummer to me though, because going in that one room, it felt like you could be in the middle of like Alabama in 1940, which is scary, but also like it does feel timeless.
I liked it. I'm now very reticent to revisit the chicken restaurant.
But I'd be the first to say that I'm bummed that they redid it. I think you'd like it if you walked in. There's like a bar in there now.
Really?
And the food is still what it was. You get a ton of food for, you get this giant chicken dinner plate for like $16 with like the giant bowl of rhubarb.
And there's a lot of people in there, especially older couples that are just in there for dinner. They're not even, they wouldn't even think about going into the park or Soak City or any of that stuff. They're just in there to have dinner and go back home. And
is it free to just park and go to the restaurant? Like it's just like
a
restaurant.
I think you can. Yeah.
It is. And well, and here's the thing I'd like to say, because I've done this several times, highly recommend it. If you don't want to pay the Knott's Berry Farm admission, just go down to Buena Park and check out all the stuff that is free in the Knott's Berry Farm area. There's the chicken dinner restaurant, although you pay for that, obviously. But you know, then there's like lots of oddball little shops. You can go hang out in the Knott's Hotel, which has
an on-site hotel.
They've got and they've got there's a fun little restaurant in there called Amber Waves. You can go get a nice beer at Amber Waves.
Is that the hotel where you can pay a fee and Snoopy will tuck you in?
Yes, we learned this from Doug Jones, our friend who will be on the show soon, I'm sure. You can have Snoopy come tuck your kid in, or presumably
or you
get tucked in.
Snoopy will walk into the room.
It's up to the person playing Snoopy.
Snoopy tucked me in. It was great. It was the best day of my life.
Doug Jones.
I wasn't sure if that was like somebody who was too into Snoopy tucking them in. You could just call downstairs, I'd like Snoopy, please. And,
$50 later, college student like hikes up some stairs because he can't fit in the elevator.
Kiss my forehead, Snoopy.
Opens a door to paw? A handful of swingers and Eyes Wide Shut masks.
Hello, Snoopy.
Hello.
Welcome to the party, Snoopy.
The general Knott's area, and also down there, these are unrelated to Knott's, but you can go down there, you can go to Medieval Times, you can go to the Pirates Dinner Adventure. We should cover all of these things at some point. There's a weird McDonald's that used to have a simulator ride in it, and it no longer does, and yet it's still labeled on the outside McThriller.
This McDonald's that we went to, incredible, has that
a big model train
in it.
This is a whole McDonald's that have novelties within them. There aren't enough left. I tried in Dallas, I tried to go to a McDonald's that had like chandeliers, and we had to explain to the Lyft driver, where are you going? Like, well, we're going to a McDonald's, but it's like a weird McDonald's. And then we got there and it was just a normal McDonald's. They had taken out the weird stuff. It's a sadly endangered animal, the weird McDonald's. But they got one of those down there. A really crazy, creepy mall that has a photo studio for fetuses, which several malls do. I don't know if you see, like, ultrasound photography.
Wait, that's in Buena Park Mall?
In the Buena Park Mall. Me and old Bug Maine went down there. And the first thing we saw when we went up the escalator was, like, ultrasound photo studio. And it was lots of heart-shaped frames with little fetuses inside. Buena Park is a real bizarre. I highly recommend. Go have a free day in Buena Park. On that one, so bizarre.
This is your other dream job would be taking an announcer through an abandoned mall.
There's plenty of them right now in America.
Why am I not pitching a true TV on this subject?
It's crazy.
Scott, the mall guy.
As you describe Buena Park, it's crazy to think about Knott's Berry Farm. I don't know how many years ago, but it was up for sale. And Disney was considering buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And they briefly were trying to figure out, can we run the monorail from Anaheim to Buena Park? Which, not that far, considering how long monorail tracks they have in Florida.
Sure.
But they control all of the land under it in Florida. Like, they would have had to run an above-ground monorail through neighborhoods. So it was pretty much impossible.
Wow, that's an incredible... That would be incredible, though.
Yeah. I mean, it would be...
Imagine it moving at, like, Hyperloop speed. Or,
oh.
Yeah.
It'd be there before you know it.
Disneyland and to knots in 2.4 seconds. you might, like, burst ventricles in your heart, but...
yeah, but you get there fast. You'd be fine.
Yeah. And also, here's the weird thing, to go back to something you mentioned earlier, the Church of Reflections that your parents were married in, mm-hmm. they actually moved that. It was inside the theme park, which is weird. I guess when they got married, it would have been, you had to, like, did they have to pay admission to get married, or did they?
No, it was, I think the park was free at the time, and I think the whole cost of renting the church was like $150.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So, not, yeah, very, very cheap thing. But then we went, going back as a teenager, the church was like under a roller coaster. It might have been under the Boomerang roller coaster or whatever it was the first roller coaster I ever rode on. And when I was like 8 years old. And
roller coaster going over the church.
And I remember making the at the time I thought it was a very cool writerly analogy of, like, this is where my parents got married, and their marriage was a roller coaster too. One day I'll like put that in something.
Have you put it in something?
No.
In the great novel. That's much better than if you're the church is just next to a parking lot or
But then they
now planes.
They've moved it.
Now it's across the street. Also in the weird free area you can explore, there's a full perfect replica of Independence Hall that is so perfect it was used in the film National Treasure. It was like that much of a double for the real Independence Hall.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you can go from that to visit the Church of Reflection and reflect on the spot where Ryan's parents were married. But weirdly, they moved it across the street. And here's an odd fact. I don't know if you know about the Church of Reflections, but there used to be a thing called the Transfiguration. It was a painting of Christ, and he looks sad and forlorn, and his eyes are closed. But if you shine a black light on it, his eyes open up. There is a magic black light, a college dorm Jesus painting.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Gee whiz.
I want one for over my bed.
Some might say that black light could be described as boysenberry colored.
Oh boy. Man. On that, we're sort of coming back around to the station. incident free, no robbery. Uh-uh. Have we missed anything big about... there's so much to talk about with the entire park, but that's... I think we're recommending it.
If
you're coming here...
Is that how this show works? Can you just... shit on an entire park?
Could you be like, say,
this is just California Adventure? No.
You know, we haven't reviewed an entire park yet, so we don't really know our system necessarily. I don't know if we have a different one. What we've been doing for rides is a system which is keep it as is, plus it up, or burn it to the ground for insurance money. Mm-hmm. And do you land on one of those for Knott's Berry Farm?
What was the first one?
Keep it as is. Oh, don't change a single thing about...
I think probably keep as is at the moment, and they also I do think you could probably review individual rides at Knott's Berry Farm, because they do have some pretty distinctive rides right now. They have Pony Express, which you sit on like a horse. Mm-hmm. It's a roller coaster you sit on like a horse. They have a Silver Bullet, which is a pretty good roller coaster. They have some pretty good roller coasters.
A couple of important ones. I believe the first roller coaster where you went upside down was at Knott's Berry, I think Corkscrew or something.
Well, Corkscrew, Montezuma's Revenge is a famous roller coaster there.
That is the first ride that had like a launch mechanism, as opposed to you just like climb up a hill on like a hook on the track. It was the first ride that launched you the way, like, you know, like a Hyperloop from Zero to 60.
Oh, kind of like green. Superman, is that that green?
It's
coaster?
Yellow.
What? I went on a green coaster there last time, and it hurt my head so bad.
That might have been the Boomerang before.
I think
they
that
got
was
rid
the.
Of it.
Did they just?
How many
get rid
years
of it?
Ago was it?
I don't know. 2 years.
Well, I don't know.
Some of them, they really tried to be a coaster park in the 90s with like very minimal theming, and then eventually they're like, "Man, we're going to take some of these down." And
Yeah, that is probably an issue with it. That was our complaint talking earlier, is that they sort of added all of the roller coasters kind of willy-nilly, and it doesn't, like, the theming from place to place doesn't make a lot of sense, and there's an area called the Roarin' Twenties, and then that's just full of a bunch of neon roller coasters, and they don't do the best job of, like, cohesion in the place, and I'm glad they've taken out a couple of those.
Yeah, it's a little bit, right now the Old West stuff is, I mean, this is 3 years ago, it's coexisting with the roller coaster stuff, the kind of tackier roller coaster stuff. And so there's really, like, some of that Old West stuff, I think, is still genuinely Old West stuff taken from Old West towns. And there's, like, a bottle house. I think there's, like, a bottle house where when you read the plaque, it's like, this lady, like, built the bottle house out of her alcoholic husband's beer bottles. And you're like, oh, geez, this is, like, very dark stuff. But and then that's sort of next to, you know, a scary drop or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh. Yeah. I think you're right that there are individual rides worth reviewing, because we didn't even touch upon a newer ride where steampunk octopus are destroying the park, right? And you have to shoot them.
Yeah, we went on this ride a couple years ago.
You're in Knott's Berry Farm in a lagoon, and there's a giant robot octopus who you have to shoot lasers at.
Yeah, it's steampunk,
like a Wild Wild West.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Giant spider in that. Giant octopus in this. Mm-hmm.
My opinion is certainly plus it up. I like all the old stuff. I don't like a lot of the non-themed roller coasters. Like the thing I was talking about is the boomerang, that green. That's gone now. But like I want...
terrible ride, by the way.
A terrible ride, but...
like a shitty roller coaster.
A shitty roller coaster that really, like, I remember there was a part where, because it goes, like, backwards, and I, like, clanged my neck against, and I could just, like, I felt, like, a crack in my neck, and I was like, oh, shit, like, I'm hurt. I think I just hurt me.
I went on it at, like, 8 years old, and I think I almost fainted.
Yeah, it's terrible, but...
have rides that hurt you.
I'll say this. The roller coaster should be themed better. It's called the boomerang. You know, put at least the queue, the line in a enclosed space. Give me a Australian man robot. Make it like he's throwing or something. We've got to get the whatever guy. Like the kangaroos are coming. We got to get away from them or whatever. Give me something like that.
Yeah.
Give me a little theme.
Theme it after Baz Luhrmann's Australia.
Baz Luhrmann's Australia. Great, great idea. I don't care if they're IPs. I don't care if they're original. I just think there's too many rides in this place that just have a generic kind of Six Flags roller coaster name. And give me some robots, give me some story. That's what I like. I like it mixed with the thrills. So I love all the old stuff. I love the chicken dinner. I'm going to love this new fancy downtown LA chicken restaurant vibe you're talking about. Is it hot chicken? Is it like the hot chicken?
I
keep forgetting.
Old Buzzy Miller. What was his name? Buzzy Miller.
Bob Willis.
Tractor Boys.
Texas Fun Boys.
The Ghost of Cordelia.
Man. How dare you speak ill of my precious roller coasters?
So, because Knott's now just feels like it's half fun old park, half Six Flags from the 90s.
It's caught in a bit of an identity crisis, and clearly that's why I like those remodels of the Calico Mine Ride and the Log Ride. That's getting you back to the old-timey charm and fun. I think you're never going to compete in the thrill area. I like that it's a historic landmark a little bit, and they should play into that more.
They should really play into it, like, you know, every couple of years in Hollywood, they're like a Western will come out and be a hit, and people will be like, the Western's back, baby. Open Range or whatever was a hit. And they should, if not really embrace that as like, we're the old West, we're Westworld, or, you know, whatever the Western property is. If they took, I guess it's all IP and everything.
Yeah.
But I feel like people would come and just for the Old West experience of it. They have an Old West stunt show there that's
a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
Yeah. I know they're doing more. I haven't seen it. They're doing more with like interactive, like you go on a journey now. Now in the old West town, where you have like there's an adventure and you're part of it. There's a whole thing going on, right, which we have not tried. If Knott's wants to bring us down, we'd love to try it. If they're listening,
I'll withhold judgment until I get to see it myself.
Sure.
Jason hasn't even been. Let's get Jason to Knott's. Make it happen.
Make it happen,
Make
Farrell.
It happen.
We sort of insulted a lot of things as we went, and now we're demanding things.
This is the most
them.
Anyone's ever talked about Knott's Berry Farm. This is the longest conversation about Knott's Berry Farm ever recorded, and also ever. So
even the employees there talk about how their kids are doing yeah. more than they talk about. Hey, well, Knott's, you're welcome. I guess with that, we're heading back to the station.
Choo-choo, we're back in the station.
That's what you say when you land back at the station.
Choo-choo.
Choo-choo. And we're hey, Ryan, thanks so much for being here and sharing your Knott's memories. It's been a roller coaster of a conversation.
Cool, man. Cool.
That's
wow.
a pretty neat analogy.
Mind if I use that?
I think. I feel like I thought of it.
Oh,
so, anything you'd like to plug or say? The closing thoughts here?
I don't really have any closing thoughts. Thanks for having me on. And I don't know. To plug, I would maybe. I do like this idea about you going to malls. That's more of a thing. It's more of a pitch to you.
Sure.
We will take it upstairs to Starbirds right
great.
Now and take it general.
Yes.
We have immediately lost our exclusivity with this. I'm fine with that. And some of those malls have been retaken by nature and there's weird swamps you can go to. Yeah, no, thanks for seeing the idea I should have been doing all along. Well, that's the next project. This is the last episode of Podcast The Ride, so I can focus on television projects.
No, I'm thrilled. Thank you guys for having me on Podcast The Ride. This is, and I hope you guys are all driving safe. I like to say that now. Watch the road. Laugh, love, but watch the road.
Wise.
And enjoy the rest of your day. And you all enjoy your day. Mike, Jason, any closing? Well, wait, go to podcast.
Contact us at Podcast The Ride on Twitter or the Podcast The Ride at Gmail? Is that right? I always forget it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or our personal Twitters, and you can find that. We don't need to say them.
No. They're all linked on our show Twitter account.
This is
account.
Some kind of dating thing for you guys.
Well, for Jason,
for me.
Certainly.
Oh,
okay.
If there's any Jason single, and if anyone likes all this bullshit, tweet at him.
okay.
If this gets you going, like tweet at Jason.
Please don't murder me with an oversized turkey leg.
But you're into someone lightly beating you with a turkey leg.
Oh, yeah, knock me around all day long.
Is that part of the new restaurant that just...
a lady
that's part of the hotel service.
Oh, boy.
Snoopy will beat the shit out of you.
Civilization is crumbling.
Thank you, Snoopy.
Just hit the button weird stuff on the Knott's phone. hey, folks, thanks so much. You've survived Podcast The Ride. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Right.
Happy rusty trails.